Hello and welcome back to Not Another Safety Talk. Today we're going to talk about the HSE's business plan, which they've released recently, and we're going to look at breaking down the sort of things that they're going to be inspecting over the next year. How's it going?
Yeah, good. Good. I think we've just come through the bank holiday hot weekend.
Nice.
We survived it. We've now got the torrential downpours. So it's very British weather up and down. But yeah, great. Absolutely great. How are you doing?
I'm all right. I'm good. I enjoyed the good weather. We don't get a lot of good weather in Scotland. And the house isn't built for it.
Yeah.
You know, it retains the heat to so okay. We like to complain about something, but getting the kids' rooms and stuff like that down at night was just a nightmare.
Force you to get out of the house and down the beach.
Yeah, which I don't mind. I don't mind, but it's the sleeping arrangements, the kids' rooms, as I say, try to get it down.
Absolutely, it's a nightmare, isn't it?
But we're not here to talk about our issues and our private lives. But it does lead into, like, temperature at work.
Yes.
You know, and obviously the issues and stuff that people may be having just now with that change in weather.
Absolutely.
And a common one that we get is, what's the maximum temperature we can work in?
I guess you guys get that a lot on the advice team.
We do. I remember, obviously, when I'm there back at school, I used to try and look at that and be like, what temperature does it need to be that we can all go home? And this, you know, so it is one of these things that always gets asked.
Yes.
You know, and there is no legal limit.
There's not, is there? There's a cold limit.
Yeah.
There was a minimum temperature depending on your environment.
Yes.
But not hot.
Yes.
Which is, I think, probably a historic thing for the UK, but climate change, you know, the bank holiday weekend makes the point we're getting a lot more hot weather and extreme weather.
Yeah.
And it's easy to say, team, stay hydrated, here's some water, but does that cut it?
Yeah.
So I know the government is looking at introducing a mandatory maximum. I know a lot of Europe already does that. Mm. So it's going to be very interesting to see how that comes through for the UK.
Yeah, because we've never needed it, let's be fair. It's still really cold.
No.
But obviously, you did like allude to if it's the sort of colder temperature, you know, and again, it's not necessarily if it hits this, then people are allowed to go home. It's just with the ideal of they're looking at sort of between 13 to 16 degrees. So what sort of things can people be doing then? You know, say we've just, type of weather we've just had, really hot, what can people be looking to implement?
So you've got the really obvious ones. You've got the stay hydrated, provide water. But then you should be looking further at, you know, what's actually going to cause people to overheat. Do you need to adjust your work activity? You know, if you're doing the work out on site in the blazing zone, can you do that in a different place? Mm. Can you stagger your work to different times of day? So you're working, you know, doing the hotter work in the cooler parts of the day and do the other work in the hotter parts of the day.
Yeah.
So look at things like that. You might be able to stagger your workforce so that people are able to take those breaks and stay out of the sun. So there's lots of things you can do. It's more on that operational side of seeing how can you adjust what's going on. But also think about workwear. You know, we often have quite strict policies in the UK on workwear within businesses, but can you be more lenient in hot weather? You know, can you allow lighter clothing so that people can stay cool?
Yeah. Yeah, because obviously even if we just look at it from like working in an office environment, you know, and as you say, it's been able to maybe change the type of clothing and stuff that they normally wear, you know, and making sure as we're having cold water available that people can get. But even, I mean, we had it where some of our amazing colleagues went out last week and bought ice wallies and ice cream and brought that in, you know, and I know that everyone was very grateful for that. So
it's
just looking at the practical side of things, you know. Obviously where we're looking at outdoors, and you may have people like say in construction and stuff that are working, that we obviously need to take into consideration their PPE.
Yep.
You know, and make sure that they're wearing their PPE. But even if we look at it where if you're trying to reduce it as soon as they can take that PPE off, you know, that they're taking it off immediately, you might be looking to give them more regular breaks so that they can go in the cool and they can get drinks and stuff. So I think that there's just a sort of those practical things that people can take away, and then we're all we're all used to living in a cold environment, so we kind of know what sort of things we would be implementing if people are obviously too cold.
Well, you know, the PPE side is actually interesting, especially with construction, because we've just had the HSE's business plan released. And we've also had the HSE taking a new and very firm approach to silica dust and from cutting stone. Both of those are massive, massive developments. But the interesting thing about the PPE is, of course, a lot of the focus on this business plan is health.
Yeah.
So it's exposure to substances, especially those you can inhale, and PPE is going to be a part of that as a control measure. So if people are hot and taking off their RPE, for example, they might be exposed to breathing in silica dust. And that is very clearly now an absolute no from the new regime perspective. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how, you know, as we get hotter weather and we've got more of a focus on health, how those two are managed. So the HSE business plan, for those people listening that don't know what it is, can you give them a quick explanation, please?
Yeah, of course. So back in 2022, the HSE set out their business plan for the next 10 years.
Yeah.
You know, and within that, they had their objectives, which is to reduce work-related ill health, particularly in mental health and stress.
Yeah.
Increase and maintain trust to ensure people feel safe, and enable the industry to innovate safely to prevent incidents, but really focusing in net zero, and then maintaining the UK's record of being one of the safest countries in the world to work.
Sure.
And then their final objective was to ensure that the HSE is a great place to work and bring the best people in. What they have done since then is each year they will provide a yearly business plan, obviously based on that 10-year one that they set out in 2022.
Yeah.
And that just allows them to probably reevaluate and make sure that the changes and stuff that has happened in the world, that they can focus in on those areas, you know. So if anything were to creep up, that they could then put that within their yearly business plan. So where we look at this year's, you know, they have heavily focused in on the health.
Yeah, we should expect. It's definitely been the trend.
Yeah, so they're obviously discussing mental health and stress in the workplace, noise and dust and musculoskeletal disorders.
Right.
You know, so that there's some main areas where they're focusing in on. They're also going to be focusing in on certain sectors like construction, and they're going to really be looking at silica dust and so on as well.
And it outlines things like their inspection plans as well, so how they're going to interact with businesses and what businesses can expect to see from the HC. Can you give us a little snapshot of that as well?
Yeah, so their inspection plans, they're going to be doing 14,000 inspections.
Sure, that's a lot.
Which is a lot. It'll keep them busy.
Yeah.
5,000 of those are going to be in the construction sector. 3,500 are going to be looking at noise.
Okay.
You know, so there's going to be a real focus in that. But from those 14,000 inspections, they're expecting to see formal action from between 40 to 60%.
Right. That's quite a high level of action, isn't it?
It is.
That's going to be plenty of fee for intervention, notices, that kind of thing for businesses.
Indeed. And if you just look at last year, it was released that for fee for intervention, they made £15 million.
£15
million? Yeah.
Wow.
Which is a lot.
That is a lot.
Which is a lot. But one of the areas that they've also highlighted is looking at asbestos.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I saw this. When I was going through the business plan, I saw asbestos and I wasn't necessarily expecting it because it's been a problem we've known about for several decades.
Yes.
And it's been constantly managed, constantly enforced. And you would almost think that we kind of know what we're doing as a country now with asbestos.
Yeah.
But it's in there firmly, isn't it? So why do you think that is?
Yeah, well, they've been reviewing asbestos and doing a lot of work on it, and it got me thinking, like, why?
Yeah.
Like, as you say, asbestos hasn't been used in buildings and so on since 2000. But where you look at where we're at now, you know, and their commitment to net zero, is that there is more onus on businesses to be looking at using technologies that help advance us towards that net zero.
Sure.
So if you then look at older buildings and businesses trying to install some of that,
yeah,
then it brings asbestos back to the forefront because they're going to be disturbing asbestos.
Of course.
You know, so it's interesting because very much like you going, why are we still focused there on asbestos? Like, has something happened? But that kind of makes sense.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it does, yeah.
We obviously picked up there and discussed some of the areas that the HSE are going to be focusing on. So if I was a business owner and I was looking at noise within my workplace, what should I do? Where should I start? What does it mean?
So first thing is you need to see if you've actually got an indication of a noise problem in your business. If you're shouting to someone to be heard from 2 meters away, you've got a problem. That's always a really good sort of soft measure and indicator. Yeah. At that point, you need to have a survey done. So you need a competent person to come in with the right calibrated kit to monitor the noise levels that your team are exposed to, because there are levels in legislation that say, if you meet this level, you should do stuff. If you meet this level, you must do stuff. So you need to know what the levels are.
Yeah.
And the only way you can do that is by proper measurement. So get somebody in to do that measurement and see what the levels are, and then that should lead into your risk assessment for controlling noise. And that's where you bring in your control measures and trying to reduce the noise level and protect people's hearing. But that's key.
That was obviously noise. So then we'll look at the next one and see we're talking about dust.
Dust is huge. So there's loads of different things that can cause you to have a dust problem. It could be wood dust. It could be silica dust. It could even be flower dust.
Yeah.
Basically anything of a dust that you can inhale causes a problem. Yeah. Causes massive lung conditions, and they're long term. You know, 11,000 deaths every year contributed to or caused by exposure to dust in the workplace. It's massive. So again, the first thing is you need to know if you've got a problem. I would say start with Cosh Essentials sheets. So HSE produce Cosh Essentials. They're really good guys that talk you through the different types of dust you can be exposed to and what is expected for you to control the levels to as low as reasonably practicable. Mm-hmm. That's your starting point. You've got to put those control measures in place. But then you need to know they're working. And the only way you can do that is through things like health monitoring. So you can get a health surveillance company to support you by doing things like lung function testing to see if people's breathing's affected. That's really, really good. But we also, there are things you can do like air monitoring. And I know you support clients in our business through air monitoring as well.
Yeah, indeed we do. As you just alluded to there, is that if our clients need any help in understanding if their control measures and so on are working, we go in, competent person, and we do that monitoring. And hopefully we see everything is fantastic and everything is in place. Or obviously, if that's not the case, then we put recommendations in place and guide our clients on what they need to be doing.
Fantastic.
You know, so if we then look at stress, right? I want to ask you actually go in stress, because we obviously covered this last time around. We've done a lot on stress, but we do know that this is a real focus area from the HSE when they started looking at stress, and they released the Working Minds campaign.
That's right.
You know, that was about trying to get people to think about stress and be looking to consider implementing controls to manage that in the workplace.
Yeah.
But now we're seeing that that's moving to enforcement, you know, and the expectation is that they're going to have the right management tools in place to reduce stress. So that's definitely an interesting one. And a key one for us, but we obviously say we covered it last time. If we go on to look at musculoskeletal disorders, what does that mean for me as a business owner?
So I was a bit surprised to see this one in there, because again, this is one that's really well controlled. We know what we're doing with it. But then I was thinking, well, what's changed? Well, what might be happening? We've got a lot more people working from home, which means a lot more people sat at desks that the employer isn't seeing because they're in somebody's house and they're doing activities away from the office. So I think that's probably where they're coming from. So there's going to be things there about how do you do DSE assessments from somewhere that's not directly in your control as an employer, but you're still responsible for. So I think that's where they might be coming from. But I'm guessing you're seeing some of this on the advice team as well.
Yeah, we definitely are. I think that it's a huge topic. I mean, if you think about even where the way the world used to be when we were all in an office, yeah. You are getting up for your desk a lot more. You're going and speaking to people. You're moving yeah. about. Whereas obviously we are sat in our desk and you can be on your chair. Teams meetings, like there's no real requirement yeah. to be moving. So it is something that we see is an issue. And the main thing is that they're carrying out a DSE assessment mm-hmm. for the individual, getting the individual to complete that, maybe even asking them to take a picture of their workspace, their setup. And then if they identify that there's any problems, then obviously that's where you take the next steps, where you may want to introduce occupational health to understand what they need and so on. You know, so I do know it's a challenge for business owners, because as you say, it's out with their control. But ultimately, yeah, that's what the expectation would be for them to just make sure that they're doing regular DSE, training their staff and making them aware. Like if anything changes, if anything comes up, let us know straight away and we'll take the appropriate measures. So we talk a lot about risk assessment, you know. Yep. People will always ask us, well, how do I control this? And we always go, you need to do a risk assessment.
Start
you know?
A risk assessment.
And
yep.
we know that that is a fundamental piece of what the HSE will come and look at.
Yep.
So I'm a business owner. What is a risk assessment?
Sure. So to do your risk assessment, there's typically five steps. You know, make sure you're familiar with those before you even start. You're looking at your hazards, who can be harmed and how. What control measures have you got in place? What do you need to put in place to reduce that risk to as low as reasonably practicable? And then you have to have a constant cycle of review when you get new information and constant checks. You know, it's easy enough to put that in place, but the key is making sure that it's actually a workable document and has an impact. Yeah. You know, I've got a background in enforcement, and as an enforcement officer, when you go into a business and you look at a risk assessment, sure, you look at it on paper. Does this seem to be good? Does this cover all the sorts of hazards you'd expect? Does it have the sort of control measures you'd expect to see? But that's only the starting point. Then you've got a decent piece of paper. The next step is to make sure that actually has some value and meaning. So I'd be looking at, are your staff trained on it? Not just have they read it and signed it, but are they actually being trained on what's important out of that risk assessment so they can do their job safely? Mm-hmm. So you look at that, you look for evidence of that.
Yeah.
But then you go one step further. You go on site and you have a look and you say, well, does this actually marry up with what I'm seeing here? You know, we're talking about hazards. Are they actually on site? Or is this some generic thing that you've cobbled up out of somewhere else?
Yeah.
You then say, is there anything you've missed? So does it cover everything? Is it sufficient?
Yeah.
Then you go another step further. So you see it looks about right, but then you go and you probe it, you test it. And you speak to staff and say, what would you do in this situation? Does that, you know, relate to the risk assessment? Does that relate to what you're expected to do? Or is it something unsafe? You know, you look for indicators that the training hasn't worked very well. You look for indicators of, is it actually well implemented on site? Because ultimately that's what the risk assessment's for. It's your starting point to understand what you are doing, what the risks are and how to control them. But you've got to take the how you control them and actually control them.
Yeah.
So that's the key. That's fundamentally the
key.
We
see a lot of that when it comes to the monitoring side, you know, and we've seen that where there may be advice or enforcement that comes from the HSE, and it is that they're looking, like they go, well, how are you monitoring this?
Yeah.
Can you evidence that you're monitoring this, that people are following the risk assessment, that they are doing the right things, you know? So you need to be able to evidence that, and ultimately you do that through monitoring. Yeah. And if you can't, then ultimately it just gets taken that you're not doing it.
I think one tip for clients as well and people out there that are wondering what can they do about this, obviously make sure your risk assessment's tight, but then I would go through that process of put an inspector's hat on. Imagine you're coming in as somebody from outside the business. You've got your risk assessment. Just go and stand out in the shop floor, stand out in the yard, wait there for a little bit, or even better, look out a window and watch where people aren't aware that you're watching and see what really happens. Does this reflect what you're expecting to happen? Does it reflect what your control measures are? Or are you seeing that behaviors are different when people aren't watched? That's a really crucial step, because if you do that now, you can get ahead of the HSE when they come and do their 14,000 inspections. And if you're one of the few that get that inspection, you can be confident that you're ready and you're doing everything you reasonably can.
Yeah. And it does need to be reflective of how you are actually working.
Yeah.
Because that written risk assessment will be used against you. So whatever you've got written down needs to be what you're actually doing. Because if you're not, then as I say, that risk assessment is what will be used against you.
Yeah. And David, you said earlier that, was it 40 to 60% of businesses are likely to get enforcement action?
Yes.
I think one thing there, yeah, I saw the business plan was talking very much about trying to take a supportive approach again.
Yeah.
So they've had a reputation for a while of being the enforcement body, you know, slapping fines on everyone, slapping fee for intervention on everyone. You said he raised an awful lot of money last year through that. It's very good to see that they're taking this supportive approach again. I think that's something for businesses to reflect on as well. If the HSE come in and see that you are doing as much as you reasonably can to control something, if it's not quite perfect, they're far more likely to work with you to try and close those gaps. If they see that you're taking a approach where you don't care, it's not a priority, or things are getting raised and they're just being neglected, they are far more likely to take an enforcement approach. And a lot of that comes down to, you know, yes, there's a bit of subjectivity, but they have an enforcement management model, which they pin all this data into, and it will basically give them guidance on what they should be doing from an approach to that scenario. But also, if it gets to prosecution territory, they have to go through two tests, the evidential test and the public interest test. Now, if you're doing everything you reasonably can, it's far more likely that they're not going to reach that threshold in the public interest test. So doing everything you can and taking that proactive approach can not only help everything on site with safety, but also, you know, put you in a much better position if something does go wrong, that you're going to be getting the support from the HC and not getting the enforcement side. We've seen a lot of stuff in our time. You know, we've done a lot of stuff in health and safety. What's the most bizarre risk assessment you've come across?
I was having a think about this, right? And as you say, we've seen a lot. I'm getting older, so it means I'm forgetting a lot more. But the one that I always go back to is people having a risk assessment for a toaster.
Yeah.
Always. Like, I don't know why you would need a risk assessment for a toaster.
Yeah.
I kind of feel a little bit, if you need a risk assessment for the toaster, then maybe you shouldn't be doing that job, because I would worry.
Yeah.
You know, so that's one that always sticks. And it feeds into just doing risk assessments for risk assessment's sake.
Yes. You know?
I'm sure that you've seen or came across.
Oh, yeah.
Similar.
The most bizarre one I've seen like that was a risk assessment for glass cups being put in a cupboard, literally, because they were concerned that there was a risk that they'd fall out and smash and cut somebody. So I see where they're coming from, but it's definitely one of those where that's not needing a risk assessment. That's just day-to-day life.
Yes.
I've also seen cost assessments as well. You know, people still got to get where the limit is.
Yeah.
I've seen a very, very, very detailed cost assessment for an air freshener.
Oh.
A plug-in air freshener, right? Not needed. Definitely not needed. I think we've all seen the classic fairy liquid, haven't we? The risk assessment for your fairy liquid.
Yeah. The air freshener. I mean, the full purpose of an air freshener is that you can smell it and it's
nice. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. That's good.
We've done a feature over the last few of past, present and future.
Yep.
So we'll talk about this in relation to the business plan this week.
Okay.
What do you think? Yeah, we'll go 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Where was the sort of business plan focus then 10 years ago?
I feel as though we were still heavily focused in on the safety aspect.
Yep.
You know, and reducing, obviously, workplace fatalities.
Yes.
Accidents. I think that, I think that's where our real focus was, you know.
Definitely. There was a lot of focus on workplace transport back then.
Yeah.
Wasn't there? Still important risk, but now we've definitely moved on. So, yeah, we're in the present. We've just gone through the business plan today. It's definitely a shift towards health.
Yes.
We've seen that coming. The focus has been shifting, and understandably, because there's so many more people dying from ill health than there are from physical accidents, So it's kind of inevitable. Looking back on it now, it's inevitable that we'd end up here.
Yeah, it's huge, and obviously the sort of impact that mental health and stress at work and so on is having.
Yeah,
you know, it's costing the UK a lot of money, mm-hmm. and costing businesses a lot. So that's ultimately where the focus is. They've obviously put that in their plan for the next. What are we halfway through?
Halfway.
So
yeah.
2032. So say we get to 2032 and the HSE are releasing their next 10-year plan. What do you think that looks like?
I think it will be dramatically different. I think we're seeing a lot of movement into AI.
Yeah.
So the HSE are already embracing that. You can see in their plan, they've acknowledged that they're using AI to review their incident reports and things.
Yep.
Which is very interesting. But I think we're going to see a shift because there's a lot of people now using AI to help make their safety management system. They're using it to draft documents, to draft risk assessments, but without necessarily having the competent person's oversight and without necessarily some critical thinking to assess it. Yeah. So I think we're going to see a big shift into how do we manage the role of AI within safety.
Yes.
And there's a lot of things as well. You know, AI is being integrated into control measures. So things like vehicles detecting humans through camera systems, using AI to try and detect the person. Mm-hmm. What happens if that gets hacked? Yeah, there's big implications there. So I think the IT security, the AI security side, I think that's going to start getting some focus from a safety perspective in a way we haven't seen yet. And that's going to be a big shift.
Yeah, and I think from our point of view is, you know, we're heavily into AI and seeing what it can do. So I think that there's a lot behind that topic, and that's something that we'll look to pick up in the coming episodes so that we can go in more depth.
Yeah, it'll be a good one. That'll be good. So thanks for joining us on Not Another Safety Talk. Today we've gone through the business plan. We've gone through what that means for you as a business and what sort of things you can do to put in place now so that you're prepared should the HSE come knocking.